Hello, everybody. We're back. So, everyone online, we're just having this discussion about if we say Vajrasattva mantras in the shower. So Janet feels uncomfortable about this, that she was taught not to say, not to do Buddhist practices in the toilet or the bathroom. And yet I've been taught that if you're in the shower, it's like the perfect physical representation of Vajrasattva's purifying nectar coming and actually washing. When we have a shower, it's like it's a result of our virtuous karma, isn't it? Yeah. We've got access to a shower, and then we can have this wonderful experience to have a shower. And so then what happens with the karma? We have the shower, so then what? The karma's finished, isn't it? It's over. We've used up that bit of karma. The answer is not to stop having showers. The answer is to make sure that when we have a shower, we reinvest. So you're experiencing the results of all of your virtuous karma, that you can now have a shower. So now let's not waste it. Let's not just kind of use up our karma. Let's use our karma to make more good karma. Well, you could do it whenever you had a shower. So then, instead of it just being a samsaric activity, so I mean, we come from a background, Judeo-Christian background, that says cleanliness is next to godliness, but that's like just a social construct. There's nothing inherently virtuous about cleanliness. There's nothing inherently good about it. It's useful, but it doesn't make you morally superior. And if you're dirty, it doesn't make you morally inferior either. Being house proud or being clean can just be a samsaric attachment. It can actually. Cleaning your house can make more samsara, not less. And cleaning your body can make more samsara and not less, too, if you do it with attachment. That's a tragedy because here we are in this human life, we've got all the leisure to have a really wonderful shower and clean water and whatever temperature that we want for however long we want. I mean, really, think about the state of the world. It's a minor miracle, isn't it? And so we do it and we enjoy it and it's over. And there's all that hard work to get to a perfect human rebirth, to have a shower, it's finished. What a waste. If you had three showers a day and you did Vajrasattva mantras, wow, supercharged. So then when you have a shower, instead of it being a cause for more samsara, it becomes a cause for enlightenment. I mean, we're crazy to waste the opportunity. So just remember, for instance, we're at Christmas and there's lots of lights everywhere. And I remember Lama Zopa Rinpoche saying about how people put lots of fairy lights around when people get married, and that it's a really nice thing to do, but it's just a cause for more samsara because it's just an offering to a samsaric couple for just this life. So it's nice, but it's not going to lead us out of suffering. It's not going to liberate us. And the merit's so small, it'll just wear off. Same, Christmas lights is just a cause for more samsara. Unless you, but we can do a really quick save. We can offer in our mind. We can offer the lights to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and we can think that we're offering on behalf of everyone that's put those Christmas lights up. Then it's not wasted. But with the shower, I mean, it's a great everyday Dharma mind training. So I think it might even be in the Gold Prayer Book from Rinpoche of all the transforming everyday activities into Dharma. And so the shower in particular, even without Vajrasattva practice, you can think that you wash away all of your own negativities and all the suffering and sickness of other sentient beings.
Can you hear me?
Well, in the shower, there might be a gadget that you could keep count and stick it on the wall. I'm sure there's a plastic gadget somewhere on eBay that where you could count mantras and stick it on the wall. A string of beads? That's right. Stick an abacus in the shower. Get a kiddie's abacus. So then it'll really help your visualization, and then it'll become meritorious as well as just, useful day to day. Yep, for that. So you think specifically of the wrongs you've done that day, but you don't limit it to that. You think of today's ones, and then you think, and the same things all the way back. in this life and previous lives. We've got to think about the things that we did today that we regret so that it's genuine. We've got a sincere regret happening. But then we can think, well, I did similar things last week and last year and probably all the way back to when I was a kiddie and maybe in previous lifetimes as well. So let's purify the lot.
And also for all the insects we kill without knowing that we step from them.
Yep.
How would you phrase
Same.
that?
So that goes for the purifying physical negativities, negative actions that we've created with our body. We purify those. Yep. And then we purify the motivating factors. So we purify our emotions and our mind as well. Yeah, so if you, I mean, any kind of cleaning, if you have the urge to clean, don't think it's about cleaning. It's a big red herring. The urge to clean is like a subliminal sickness. No, the opposite. It is the will to enlightenment. So Nietzsche talked about the will to power. This urge to clean, it's the will to enlightenment. It's how everything in us is just yearning for liberation and enlightenment. And instinctually, we can get there, but we've got to help ourselves. And so, because we're so overwhelmed by our senses all the time, this urge for purification, we think means, oh, I've got to clean the house. Or, oh, I really need a shower. It's got nothing to do with it. Because underneath that is this urge for purification. Everything's about intention. Yeah, so most of the time we've just got a default intention and it's very small. It's not big enough. So then you get into the shower going, oh, I really need a shower. And then you can save it by going, oh, hang on a second, let's adjust my intention. Let's make it up for a big purpose. And you can do that whilst you're showering. That's okay. Yep. So what does Francesca say? We need to watch out that we don't become nihilistic with the reason for doing the activity. Yes. Yes, we've got to make sure we don't get nihilistic, and also we've got to make sure that we don't go, oh well, because it's just an urge for purification, I'll just do the purification and I don't have to have a shower. Don't go down that way either. I mean, a whole bunch of hippies went down that way. Yes, so Kerry, I like cleaning when I'm stressed. That's right. So there's the really good before and after when you're stressed to clean. But if you just leave it at that, that's all you're going to get. Before and after, and then it's over. But if while you're putting in the activity, you think, just as I'm putting in the effort to clean, may I put in the effort to purify my mind. May all sentient beings be free of all the dirt and turmoil in their mind while you're cleaning. And so then the more you scrub, the better. It also means that you may end up cleaning a bit slower. Because you're thinking about it. Doesn't a clean place create harmony? Yes, it does. That's right. But why it creates harmony is because it helps us then to it's like conducive conditions, a clean place. Conducive conditions to then clean our mind. So it's the process of it, because I'm sure there's lots of rich millionaires sitting around in their nice, pristine, clean houses, but their minds aren't clean or unstressed. So it's not the clean house isn't the thing that does it for us. But I think because I've just done this today, everything gets falls apart more and more and more and more, and then one day you go, oh my gosh, I've got to clean this all up, and you clean it up, and there is some kind of transformation that happens externally, but it happens internally as well. I forgot when I was hanging my clothes out, I forgot to make it any kind of dharma.
So basically, everything that we do.
Everything that we do, we can turn into dharma. Yeah. Oh, Janet's just had an epiphany. Oh, wow. That's right. But it probably means that you're going to live life in slow motion. Because I remember when Eddie started doing the purification practices when washing the dishes, and it'd take a long time, and he'd have to boil the water several times to keep it hot. But then you can, when you get to the really dirty ones, then you can think, that may the minds of the really dirty politicians and narco traffickers and pedophiles and all of that, may they be cleaned. And so as you're putting in all the scrubbing effort, you can think, yeah, of course it's going to take effort because some of these negativities are really entrenched. Is it childish to think to abandon dirt, abandon stains while cleaning or showering? Yeah, that's right. So that was one of a monk came to the Buddha he must have had ADHD, but it wasn't called that in those days. He couldn't remember anything. He couldn't understand anything. He really wanted to be a good monk. And he just said, I just can't do it. And so he's just given one job, which was to say, abandon dirt, abandon stains, and to just clean the shoes outside the gompa. And so he just did that. And he'd say, abandon dirt, and then he couldn't remember what to say next. And then he'd say, abandon stains, and he couldn't remember what he'd just said before. Like, it was really extreme suffering. But over time, he was able to keep the two sentences together. And then over time, his mind started becoming clean and clear, and his memory developed. And in the end, he became like the top student of the entire monastery just from this practice. So, what was it? It wasn't about cleaning shoes, it was about purification and making that your actual practice. Yeah, we can just be saying the Vajrasattva mantra, the long one or the short one on Vajrasattva Hum, because while we're reciting that, we're not saying we're not engaging in a negative conversation in our mind. So at least we're refraining from harm. And there is the power of the object. So the power of the mantra will work on us regardless. If we were saying just some affirmation in English, it'd be different. It wouldn't be nearly as powerful, but the mantras have power themselves. And that's uncanny, but I've seen that because I've seen it that with animals, that you can be patting an animal and just talking to them calmly, and they're really distressed. And then you start patting the animal and saying medicine Buddha mantras, and they completely chill out.
I take away whatever it was and throw it up. Or if they did feel it, I would take them in front of the Buddha with their hands together.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, Janet, that's great. Yes. So that you're really benefiting your pets then, like you're giving them not just a good life with humans, but a good Dharma life. Teach them not to kill. Yeah, Pearlie taught her cat not to kill as well. So she had a cat called Madam Orange Cat and a pond in the garden. This was in Melbourne, and there were fish. Goldfish in the pond. And Madam was trained to anything that was in their garden, she wouldn't kill. And there was a bunny rabbit that lived next door. So when the bunny rabbit came into the garden, it was safe. The cats didn't chase it. But if the bunny rabbit was next door, was out, and Madam went next door, then she'd chase it. So she really knew this was the boundaries. And I've seen her. She would drink the water out of the pond. And the goldfish would swim along and sometimes like swim through her mouth through and swim out. And she'd look, but she wouldn't catch. So, Kerry, I wonder if a mantra is a universal language that other beings understand. The mantras are actually a subtle form of the Buddha. So, you know how sound is a form? You can feel sound waves. It's a form. You can't see it. You can th see things actually rattling. So just like sound is a form, what is it a form of? What the mantra is a form of that Buddha. So the sound of Vajrasattva's mantra is Vajrasattva. Okay. And oh yes, so Ella, you would have been to that house with Madam and the goldfish. Yes. Okay, and also, so Francesca's saying remembering not being able to say the White Tara mantras until having the initiation, and then it was suddenly easy. That's right, with the blessing from White Tara herself. Yes. So that's a wonderful introduction for our being able to do our mantras tonight. I like being reminded about how the mantras are actually the Vajrasattva mantra is Vajrasattva.
Just like the other month is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the subtle form of it. And so I read an article, and I can't remember which lama it was who wrote it, but then he said, so what that means is when we recite a mantra, we bring in the breath. We're saying the mantra, it's in our body, like it's in our the sound is in our comes from our throat, it reverberates in our body. So we are actually physically internalizing the Buddha because that physical form, that vibration of the sound is in our body. That breath that says the mantra is in our body. So it's a like a really it's a way of really integrating this practice. Yeah, in DV, that's right. And that class blows my mind every time. So yeah, if you're doing something where you need to concentrate and it's a hands-on thing like cutting glass or crochet or sewing or anything like that, if you have mantras on in the background, that's fantastic because that's like conducive conditions. So, but you may not be able to say mantras at the same time because you have to really concentrate. So that's okay. But again, what you should do is just set your motivation at the beginning and just set the motivation that the thing that you're making, may everyone who sees it, thinks about it, whatever, be connected with the Dharma and become free of all their suffering and enlightened. Minimum, you can do that with whatever you're making before you start. Yeah. And then you just put the music on for the nice vibes and then just focus on what you're doing. So Venerable Rabina, when I was talking to her when she came to visit, she said, whatever you're doing, you keep doing, it's still an ordinary thing, but you put bodhicitta underneath it. It's such a nice way of saying. So you do cooking, you do your cleaning, you do craft. You might have to focus everything about it. You've got no room to think about anything else, but you put bodhicitta underneath it, which means you bring that motivation to awareness before you start. Or in my case, I hardly ever do it before I start. It's as I get started, I'm kind of running to catch up with myself. And then, yeah, so.
Would you call it identity?
No, dedication's at the end, but it mirrors the motivation. They're pretty much the same, but one is at the beginning and it directs you in the so then once you're off in the right direction, you don't have to keep reminding yourself you're already going in that direction. Then the dedication gathers it all together. And that's why it's important to dedicate for enlightenment and to dedicate remembering emptiness. So it's all gathered together, it's going to the highest possible purpose, and it can't be destroyed. Yeah, it's fine. If you can't hear the words, often if you're concentrating, you're not hearing anything else, but it's still blessing the environment. If you've got the mantras playing, it's still blessing the environment. It's not disrespectful. It's a benefit for all the beings seen and unseen that are there, even if you're not. So I asked Geshe Zopa about this because, if you have, say, His Holiness on YouTube playing in the background while you're wandering around. On one hand, it's kind of disrespectful because he's just kind of there and you're not showing respect and you're just doing your business. But on the other hand, it's like creating this incredibly virtuous environment while you're just wandering around doing stuff. So it's again, like Ian was saying, it depends on your intention. And what our intention is what we make it. We just make it a good intention. So Geshe Zopa said this is what he does. If he has to do housework, he puts His Holiness the Dalai Lama on and he does it in company. And it's respectful, it's fine.